So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
My name is Chris Lang, and it is Thursday, Health Writers again. I'm going to get right into this because our guest today is sort of a leading expert in the area of sustainable and green infrastructure development, planning and implementation, et cetera, et cetera. His name is Ted Marcus Petit, and he is the owner of Green Link Projects, LLC, and an associate lecturer at the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences at UW. You've talked about this quite a bit, I take it. Hi, Ted.
Hi, good to see you, Chris. Thank you for having me.
So you originally hail from Madison, but you have some sort of international connections over in Germany, which we'll get to in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, let's talk about green anything, green cities. I mean, it's sort of a buzzword now, green and sustainable. Let's talk a little bit about what we're talking about here.
Well, I think, Chris, what we're looking at is how to build the infrastructure in a city to make it more easy for the inhabitants of that city to actually live a green lifestyle, and especially in this case, given the focus of your particular interest, the health implications of that. So we're looking at transportation options that kind of lower the carbon footprint, get people out on bicycles, get them walking, public transportation options that are easy to use, easy to get to, have a lot of repetition. Many of the things that I've seen in Freiburg, which you'll probably mention, Madison's sister city, essentially give people the opportunity to live that greener, healthier lifestyle in an easier way and facilitate that and cut down on the car traffic.
Okay. And I would say most of our listeners probably are sort of familiar with the green movement. And that you brought up Freiburg. First of all, tell me, you have a personal connection with that city.
I do have a personal connection. My parents met there in the mid-60s. My mother was a junior abroad student from UW-Madison. My father was a physician studying in Freiburg, and they met in the romantic sister city, not a sister city at that point, but in that romantic city, and conceived there, born here, and then spent my first 4 years over there.
Great. So that's not coincidental, then, that you're sort of that's your focus with the green movement, or is it sort of a combination coincidence that you happen to be born there?
You know, I'd have to say that my interest in this started relatively early, given the fact that a lot of my relatives in Germany, which I have many, were into recycling and things like that. I remember being in Heidelberg, Germany years ago and throwing a glass bottle into the waste can when I was about 7 years old and having my aunt go, "Nein, nein, das musst du nicht machen, das geht nicht." And she was very, very adamant that there was another way of doing that, and that was one of the first times that I'd actually understood that there's a way of dealing with refuse and trash and all of that kind of stuff that makes it easier for people and societies to kind of make that stream cleaner. Freiburg itself has no landfill at this point, which is very interesting. They do a pretty large source separation, so people, homeowners, are separating glass, they're separating plastic, they're separating organic material from their gardens and from their kitchens, and those all go into separate bins. The organics go into a biogas digester, which actually heats part of the town. So you have an opportunity there to kind of see different types of things that might not be quite as available in the U.S. market. And what I've done over the years after having seen this about 10 years ago and realized that they had dug into it relatively deeply, to try and bring some of those ideas back to the U.S., especially back to Madison, and use that sister city relationship as kind of a conduit, because we have a lot of nice project partners.
Let's talk about the sister city relationship. I don't know if everybody knows what that means. What can you talk about, give it a little history of the relationship with Freiburg, as well as talk about what does sister city mean?
Sister city is basically an arrangement between two cities that allow them to kind of exchange ideas, have a lot of interaction between individuals within the city, city government, over a period of time that's actually codified. Ours was solidified in 1988 with Freiburg. It was former Mayor Sensenbrenner and the Lord Mayor Rolf Berma in Freiburg that did that. Prior to that, like I mentioned, my mother having been a junior abroad student, the connections between the universities, between Freiburg and Madison, have been very, very strong for many, many years, even prior to the sister city relationship. So you see a long-term development of the opportunity of people to kind of exchange ideas, move back and forth, and have the opportunity to meet and greet each other, and it's very positive.
So that brings us to why we're here. So Freiburg is sort of the epicenter, if you will, of this green sustainable movement. And would you say the sister city relationship was originally based a little bit on that? Or was it just because of the similarities in the politics and the educational infrastructure?
I think it was mostly the two mayors who actually enjoyed each other's company at that point in time, Berma and Sensenbrenner, and understanding that there had been a university relationship prior to that. But, you know, Freiburg is a city of about 220,000. Strong university research town, leans politically very, very hard to the left. Actually, the center of the Green Party movement. The current mayor is a Green Party individual. Many people on the city council come from the Green Party. And so a lot of the sustainability and green infrastructure development stuff comes from that environment. The sister city opportunities, what I saw 6 or 7 years ago, we hadn't been focusing quite as much on the green infrastructure transfer of information. We'd been doing more.
That's what you've been doing, kind of.
That's what I've been doing. Yeah. And we'd been more concentrating on just exchange between individuals. We have a Gesellschaft here, kind of a group of people that are supportive of the sister city relationship. We have a group over in Freiburg also that is kind of a citizens group, and they exchange, they bring people back and forth. We've done a lot of cultural exchanges. We've had a lot of musicians that have gone to Freiburg, musicians from Freiburg that have come here. We have a lot of exchanges where people go back and forth. But the green aspect of it, I think, was being a little bit left out of the equation just because there really wasn't anybody focusing on that specific issue. And that's one of the things that
anybody here.
Anybody here.
You mean, because they were doing this way back when, you're saying.
Exactly. When? And so you basically have, in Freiburg, you have a cornucopia of opportunities for green infrastructure development. You have fantastic public transportation. You have sustainability-oriented neighborhoods. One of the places where I take a lot of people to is the city area of Vauban, which is a former French military base that was actually retooled to be a sustainability neighborhood. Where you have energy-efficient housing. You actually have energy-plus houses, where you have kind of this idea of a passive house, which your listeners may not understand, so I'll define it quickly. Passive house is a high-energy-efficient building style, 80 to 90% reduction of heating and cooling load. So essentially you're talking about very thick insulated walls, triple pane windows, and a heat air ventilation exchange system to make the whole thing work. But in the city area of Vauban, you have those passive houses, and you also have a lot of solar electric on top of some of them. So there's one area called the solar settlement area where every single house is an Energy Plus house. That means that it actually generates more energy than the users inside are using on a daily basis.
And that's really what we're talking about today, is, I mean, with the green movement, the sustainable movement, the idea of being sort of self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. But it's multiple angles too, but it's also infrastructure, the density, mm-hmm. downtown density.
Yep.
Now, so tell me, just run through the gamut of things. You mentioned PV, photovoltaic, mm-hmm. Solar panels for us lay people.
Mm-hmm.
Just run through the litany of sort of building decisions that they're making now in Freiburg to contribute to its sustainable characteristics.
I guess one of the things I do is quickly back up. In the 1970s, they had a nuclear power plant that was going to be built within about 30 kilometers of Freiburg. The Freiburgians decided that they were not interested in having that. They protested heavily. There's lots of pictures of them sitting out in the streets, much like us in the Vietnam War with water cannons on citizens, etc. They were able to stop the development of the nuclear power plant, but that began the dialogue of what should our city actually look like? What kind of energy uses are we going to have? So you have photovoltaic, yes. You also have electric glass, which is like basically PV within a glass environment or other types of things like that. You have solar thermal, which is essentially heating up water to be used for showers, and also indoor heating, which is very interesting. They have a lot of radiant heat. You have biogas, which is used much like a natural gas resource in the community. So
if you go buy a house in Freiburg right now, you have your biogas hookup, and then all the facilities. I'm just thinking logistically, you have your bins for every little thing, and you have your hookups to your biogas, and you have your meter that can tell you how much kilowatts you're generating, things like that. I mean, talk about, like, in the daily life of somebody over there, how it would be different from what we're used to.
You know, I think in the daily life aspect, you really see that people have to end up, the technology is great, but they end up having to change their behavior. And one of the things that I think they've seen over there is that as they've initiated, and any of your listeners can tune into Freiburg, hook up to it on the internet, look for Freiburg Green City, you'll find lots of interesting links and information. But at the end of the day, the technology doesn't really do it. It really requires behavior change. And I think one of the things that you see in Freiburg is that they've made it fun. It's an interesting environment. It's continually talked about. One of the things that people talk about in coffee shops, much like we talk about in coffee shops here, about many, many things over the... What you hear is that people are interested in the next development in town. They're interested in what is going to be the energy resource for that development. They're interested in what the transportation options are going to be as far as public transportation, as far as biking, etc., for that development. And you end up with an environment that kind of stimulates the individual citizen to be involved. And I think that's one of the benefits that you've seen in Freiburg, is that the citizens were involved on the front end from the 70s, the mention of
well,
the
protest. Well, you mentioned your grandmother, was it? When you were
mother.
Mother?
Yeah, yeah.
When you were seven. I mean, that was in the 70s, and that was sort of unheard of here.
Yeah.
So you're saying get it into the public consciousness. It is more. And some of us sort of understand the progressive nature of some of these European countries now. Mm-hmm. And does that make sense that it's sort of... they're ahead of the game on this compared to us?
I'd say that they're a good 20 to 30 years ahead of us at this point. I mean, Germany itself, we have about 40 biogas digesters in the state of Wisconsin at this point, have capacity, obviously, for many, many more. Germany itself, over 6,000 at this point, various types, food waste, cow manure, pig manure, etc. So you just see kind of an environment that's been more supportive of doing those types of things, but over the
politically,
time, politically, yes,
culturally, maybe. People like here, people like their cars. They like to live out in the middle of nowhere, and the gas is cheaper here.
And the gas is cheaper here. I think that's one of the things that we face as kind of a conundrum, is that we have relatively inexpensive resources right now, especially natural gas. So a lot of these options need a little bit more goosing. What they did in Germany was they did a feed-in tariff, which was basically a metric where for 20 years, if you installed solar, if you put in biogas, if you did other renewable energy options, you got a fixed rate price for the buyback of those kilowatt hours. And it was very, very good. You know, 20 years ago, you could get about 53 euro cents per kilowatt hour for solar electric pumping into the grid versus probably 7 to 8 kilowatt cents for a coal-fired power plant. Since then, those metrics have moved down because obviously you can't keep incentivizing that over a period of time. But what that allowed was that it allowed investors, it allowed banks to become private equity money, to become involved in the equation, and it made it much, much easier for individual homeowners, for businesses, for schools, et cetera, to install these kind of renewable energy options. But I think when you go back to kind of how cities function, the renewable energy is just only a portion of that. And one of the things you see in Freiburg, which I think Madison is actually doing very well, one of the things that I've been very impressed about, and one of the things that a lot of my German visitors are impressed about, is the number of bike paths. We had Klaus Hoppe visiting recently, the former head of renewable energy and recycling for the city of Freiburg. He hadn't been here in about 5 years and was very impressed with our growth of infrastructure as far as bicycling, and the fact that our metrics for the number of people who were commuting to work in the fair weather months had increased. I think we're at 7 or 9% now, which is actually relatively impressive. So that's one of the things that I've seen over the years, is that you have these two sister cities. You have one in Europe that for many reasons has moved farther ahead, faster, as many European countries have. But you have the environment here in Madison that's very conducive and very politically and socially interested in the same types of things. So one of the things I've done over the years, I brought policymakers back and forth, brought citizens back and forth, brought students back and forth, just to understand how those things in Europe are functioning, how the thought processes over there have gone, and try and make a translation so that we can do more of that kind of stuff faster in a city like Madison. Because at the end of the day, Freiburg isn't the only European city, isn't the only German city that has done these things, but it was a forerunner. And one of the things that you can see in Madison is we have the opportunity to actually be one of those forerunners. And I think having a model like a Freiburg, having very supportive project partners over there, the city of Freiburg is unbelievably supportive of networking the information, helping us as we travel over there, or bringing expert guest lecturers over here in that whole networking process. They're very willing to share.
What is their motivation then? They think it's so awesome that they just want to spread the word.
I think part of it is actually altruism. You know, one of the things I've heard many times in Germany, I work with the German American Chamber quite a bit too, so I don't just concentrate on Freiburg, but I see a lot of different areas. And one of the things I hear consistently is that, yeah, Germany has done a wonderful job with this stuff. But the fact of the matter is, it's a relatively small country. So,
well, that's the thing. Bringing it here, then.
At the end of the day, if their version is that if the U.S. and the Chinese in particular don't begin kind of changing the way that they function and the amount of usage. Your listeners have probably seen some of the energy usage statistics per person in the various countries across the globe, and like, we unfortunately are relatively large energy hogs.
Well, it's interesting you bring up China, because I can kind of understand the delay in implementing some of this technology here, because our country is older, the infrastructure is older, and it's never really been destroyed by war. And so we never really had to rebuild, so it's a retroactive thing. And it's, of course, easier to build new with these technologies. So talk a little bit about Freiburg and how they are doing with retrofitting. I mean, you also have two separate elements, though. You have the public sector, you know, the city hall or whatever, they're implementing it. But then I would think the big sector would be residential, right? So you have to get the construction companies, the designers, et cetera, on board. So maybe talk a little bit about the difference between retrofitting some of these places and building from new, and how they get through that.
That's always a conundrum. 90% of our building stock, both here and in Europe, already exists. Building new is obviously easier. What you see in Freiburg, though, is that they have raised the metrics for both redevelopment and remodeling of existing buildings, as well as the new building issues. And
so, explain raise the metrics. What exactly does that mean?
When you had citizens get involved in the 70s and become a large part of the equation of pushing what was going on within the city of Freiburg, what ended up happening was that the city itself began responding. And so what they did was, through their regulatory processes, they began to realize that they could raise the bar for like energy efficiency and development. So now, for instance, if you're building new and you're a developer and you're looking at a piece of city land, you have to build to this passive house standard. Remember, that's at 80% to 90% reduction of heating and cooling load. Incredibly like efficient compared to any sort of normal building kind of style. What they also did was they began incentivizing, as people were remodeling houses. There's a really good example of this in Freiburg. It's called Buggingerstrasse 50, and it's actually about two blocks from where I played in the sandbox in the late 60s, early 70s. And what it is it's social housing. And it was a big 14-story, ugly, nasty building from the 1950s. And they went to actually remodel this. And the city, the state, and the federal government helped them to raise this remodel to the passive house standard. And the developer that I go talk to, and have brought several tour groups from the city and students through to see this particular building, which is really incredible, not only for its energy efficiency, but also its social consciousness. They have now remodeled two other buildings, and the developer himself has said, you know, the first one cost a lot of money. It took longer than we expected. The second one came in on budget, and we were in on time. The third one, we finished 2 months early, and it was cheaper than we thought. So another one of those concepts is that you have to build an environment where not only the politicians are supporting this kind of stuff and the community is supporting this kind of stuff, but like you're mentioning, developers, builders, architects actually understand the technology and are able to implement it and do it in a cost-efficient manner. So passive house 15 years ago would have cost you 7-8% more than normal build because of the extra additions. Now it's kind of getting down into that 2-3% range. So it's getting into line with normal build, normal building practice and costs, which means that it's much easier for the individual to choose the high energy efficient option, because you have the whole private sector environment ready, poised, willing, and understanding of the technology to push that forward.
So how about here? I mean, you obviously in Madison, we're in a sort of a political bubble in some sense, and you have planners here that are embracing it. and you have the city, the mayor, council that are for it. How would you, how about approaching some of the other towns, La Crosse, Eau Claire, and things like that, who may be less, you know, maybe reticent to sort of embrace this for whatever reason? I mean, apply it here. We're, I guess, talk about overall in Wisconsin, talk about where we are in relationship to this sustainability in terms of building practices and things like that, and political will. And then can it how easy can it spread outside of Madison?
I think it can easily spread outside of Madison, but I think that Madison itself, being a pioneer of sorts and being politically nicely poised to push these sorts of innovations, can actually stand as a model, much like a Freiburg did 30 years ago until this point, where a lot of smaller towns outside of Freiburg thought that a lot of these things were kooky, they were leftist, they were, you know, idiocy, essentially. And now they're seeing that that Freiburg model has actually had its benefits. Now Freiburg is a known destination for tourism and for interest in green technology. You see the inhabitants living nicer, better lifestyles. A lot of the carbon footprints have actually lowered over the years. They have some very interesting monitoring stations put in central locations around town that kind of show the noxious gases that are in town, much like we have, you know, our ozone days in the summer. They have very similar types of things there because they sit in a very large valley environment, and you notice those numbers coming down. And one of the things that they've done is they've been very effective with moving that car traffic outside of the city.
I'm glad you brought that up because I want to bring it back down to lifestyle change and as there, some of the health benefits. I mean, the density is involved, and then so and no car vehicles are permitted, correct? Permanently within a certain square mile radius of the city center, and thus for deliveries, things like that. Maybe we'll talk about a little bit about that. Talk about the fact that some grocery stores, I guess, are like requiring packaging or products that can fit within a backpack or something, so that people can on bikes can carry. And this is something I got from Klaus's presentation. But talk about lifestyle changes that would be maybe new for us.
Well, one of the big things that they did years ago was their city center area downtown by their cathedral used to all be car parking. So in the 1960s, you can see pictures much like our State Street of that kind of car parked up area. The city decided in the 70s that they were going to remove cars from that central area and actually make people walk in or bike in or take public transportation in. The businesses at that point fought it tooth and nail. 3 years later, they asked the city to actually expand that pedestrian zone because they saw an uptick in their revenue. And we have our farmers market began on Saturdays. Now we have it on Wednesdays. They have it all days of the week, 7 days of the week. So again, that idea that you can get local produce, local types of things, 7 days a week from your bicycle, using public transportation, don't need to take your car to the outskirts of town, and it makes it an awful lot easier.
Awesome. Now, we just got into the interesting details. We have to wrap it up. But we're talking to Ted Petith, and he is the owner of Green Link Projects, LLC, which basically he advocates for green planning and sustainability in Madison, and he takes his knowledge from Freiburg, Germany. Thank you very much, Ted, and to Steve Blank for engineering. Be sure to go to healthwriters.wordpress.com to check out archive copies of the program, and also like us on Facebook at Health Writers on the Air. I'm Chris Lang. Thank you.